Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Comedy Concepts with your host, Nancy Lombardo.
Hello, hello, and greetings, Comedy Concept listeners. Well, today we have a very exciting show for you. Yes, we do. Today's guest is Allison Arngrim. Confessions of a Prairie Bitch, How I Survived, Nellie Olson, and Learn to Love Beyond Being Hated. And we have a call in to her now.
Let's see. Hello.
There's Allison. She's so fast.
I'm here.
Hi, Comedy Concepts here. Nancy Lombardo speaking.
Hello.
Thank you for taking time out from your incredibly hectic schedule.
Oh, my God. I know. I'm almost all packed. I got to catch a plane today for Vegas. It's completely insane.
And you've already done one interview today.
Yes. You're the second interview of the day. I have one more, and then I have my friend drive me to the airport. And then I'm in Vegas, and I go straight to the theater for tech, and it's, I don't know how I do it.
I don't either. You're the first guest that I actually had to take out a file folder for to keep
right,
up
right.
with
it's
you.
It's like a crate at this point, isn't it?
It's like a crate. I can't believe how much you do, Allison. This is incredible. For those
awesome.
Of you who, it's impossible to believe, but don't know who Allison, and I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, Arngrim?
Oh, you got it right in the first try. I'm impressed.
All right, Allison, you might remember her amongst her many things, but Little House on the Prairie, the part of Evil Nellie, which has
very
haunted her and followed her whole life. But she
yes.
has managed to make into a money-making marketing maven.
Yeah,
this woman
is cash in, you know?
Cash in. It's amazing. I loved your book, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Thank you
It
so much.
Wasn't what I thought it was going to be, and then I couldn't put it down, read it in one day.
Now, what on earth did you think, you poor thing?
Well, I thought it was just going to be another one of those Hollywood, blah, blah, blah stories, but
yeah,
it's more than that.
I read a lot of celebrity biographies, which is probably why I wrote it the way I did, because you read a lot of them, and they don't really tell you a story. They just kind of tell you a bunch of things. It's a list.
Yes.
They go, this happened, that happened, this happened, and then I slept with yada, 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 and I was in this movie, that movie. And it's a itinerary. You just get kind of a list. And sometimes it's an interesting list or there's an occasional story. When I read a book, I don't know. I want them to tell me a story once upon a time.
Well, that's what you
did
with
that.
This book.
Yeah.
You did, I think, using your theater background in constructing the book, you made it more than just, what I had, I tell you, I've read a lot of biographies. I think I read at least two a week. And some of them I've just wanted to stop reading and hit myself in the head with the book and wake up.
we've all read those, yes.
I'm like, what does this have to do with the title? I would say.
Right. Hello.
I
think mine does match the title. I think that's very good.
I think it's, and it's very interesting, too, because you are doing so much. So let's take my listeners back, they're already coming into the chat room now. But let's take... Yes, let's take my listeners back to the beginning. You come from an acting background. Both your parents were performers.
Correct.
And your mother, I was surprised to hear, because I am a big voiceover fan.
Oh, then you must have gone to pieces. Mom was Casper.
Casper, Gumby, just to name a few, which I used to be a big fan of June Foray. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. My mother knew all those people because my mom was Casper the Friendly Ghost. She was Gumby, the little green ball of clay. She was Davy of Davy and Goliath, the most religious claymation show ever made.
I know,
Polly Purebred.
I don't know, Davy.
Davy. Or she used to say, come on, Goliath, let's go outside and pray.
Play.
And then, of course, you had she was also the one sweet Polly Purebred, Underdog's girlfriend. So, yes.
Yes, Polly Purebred.
Yep.
Yes. So you come from this. Your father was an actor as well. And I guess at one point he was your manager when you were a child.
Yes, he was an actor, and then he went into management, and he did the, you know, dadager, manager thing. But the only thing that was good is he actually was a manager prior to my working. He actually worked for Liberace, Debbie Reynolds. He worked for Liberace's manager, Seymour Heller & Associates, and was in charge of Liberace for the West Coast. And it was just very bizarre to have your dad manage Liberace. So he already had, then he had his own company, Arngrim & Peterson, by the time I started working. So.
Which is, and then I believe at one point that your parents were licensed in Canada to do Tennessee Williams?
Yes, they had the. They were the only ones. They had a theater there in the 1950s when Tennessee Williams stuff was first hitting, and it was all considered very scandalous then. You know, his movies, he did the movies and the plays were banned in some places. And so they were the only people doing Tennessee Williams at their theater in Canada. They did Streetcar, Named Desire. They did Glass Menagerie. They did everything. And it was a big hit.
They seemed like real mavericks from your book.
Yeah.
They seem
they were
like,
threatened with shutdown and everything because they were doing dirty plays. Tennessee
but they
Williams,
were kind of a little ahead of their time in that guerrilla, let's put on a show, we can do it, we don't need money, let's just do it.
Very. I tell that insane story, my father attempted to invent air conditioning by putting a giant...
That was hilarious. I'm not going to give that away. That is so funny in the book.
Nearly killing those people who were rehearsing when the whole thing fell down.
Don't give too much away.
Yeah, it's a really trippy story. It's great.
And you took this, and I'm just updating. So then, as a child, then you moved to, long story short, you moved to New York and California.
Yeah, I made it to Hollywood. Yep.
Made it to Hollywood, and your older brother was an actor at the time.
Yep.
And you just almost fell into it, I guess.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It was predestined.
It was a family business. It was like a. I thought everyone was on TV till I was like seven.
Now, was Little House on the Prairie your first audition theatrically?
Oh, God, no. I've been working steadily since I was about six. I was auditioning as a baby, and I got my first job at six was the Hunt's Ketchup commercial thing. And then there was a show called Juvenile Jury. It was like Kids Say the Darndest Things. And I was on that. And then I did a movie when I was 10. That's that whole movie story with Richard Egan and Dina Merrill. So
yes,
I just came off the movie.
I remember.
And but that was the thing is I was trying to get work, and you know I was all of 11, and I wasn't working enough.
But by 11, you are already a pro.
Yeah, I was. Well, my father was trying to tell me I was over the hill. I wasn't getting enough work. I might have to wait till I was 18 because I wasn't gainfully employed at 11. And then I got Little House on the Prairie.
Did you feel any pressure?
You think? Well, that was the thing. It was always pressure. That's what everyone did.
Because
everyone.
To please your father, and to please your manager at the same time,
and to compete with the rest of the family. Everyone in my family, and pretty much everyone my family knew, the conversation every single day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner was, so you got any auditions? I went on audition. Did you get a call back? Did you get a call? I got a call back for this thing last week. Did you get the part? It was people constantly.
You were the fourth Marx brother.
Right. And so all everyone did was talk about that they went on audition. Did they get the job? And then my dad had clients. We had 20 people going on auditions to talk about whether they got the job. All anyone did was go on auditions and try to get work, get their 8x10s done, get a new agent. And this was the conversation. People were constantly talking about getting a new agent, getting new pictures, going on auditions, and are you getting work? It was like you get any gigs. This was
that
it.
In
and
itself
even at that
is,
age, it was had you got a gig. Yeah.
It in itself is a movie. I mean, just I.
It is.
The first, I think, 75 pages of your book are a movie in itself before you even get to Little House on the Prairie.
Yes. We had to condense. I mean, when I handed my book in, you know, people complain about having to write 70,000 words. I had to write 70,000 words for a book. I wrote 130,000 and we cut it down. And we did have to consolidate chapters. I think I had, like, an entire book before I got, like, Little House. It was, like, that huge.
What? You had a
oh,
what?
Yeah, I had, like, a whole book before I even got to the Prairie chapters. We had to jam it in to, like, you know, the opening
Yeah, that's
chapter.
What I'm – that's the feeling I got. I said that this
was
almost two books in one.
Because my family was so completely demented and all the stuff that went my dad growing up on – the orphan who gets adopted and grows up on a farm on the prairie. I mean, he was essentially Albert Ingalls, for God's sakes. It was
that is true.
A bizarre story.
Now,
and
only your father was an orphan. Both your parents were orphans?
No, so weird. My mother was more Nellie Olson. He was like Albert Ingalls. He was the orphan boy who gets adopted by the farm family, and her father was a doctor, and she grew up in a very rich household and went to private school.
Yes, but very interesting in that when your mother, like, and I'm just seeing there's so much of them in you, in her instincts, she went, your father and his business partner went on an audition, and she happened to be there.
Yeah, and she wound up, yeah.
Because she just spoke up.
She did. She just, they said, and what do you do, dear? Because they had this whole plan. They had worked more than she had, and they got to Toronto, and they got set up on this great audition. We're going to meet the guy who's the biggest voice casting person in Canada. And they get in there, and they're all given the resumes. And he says, and what do you do? Basically, like, she drove them. And she said, oh, I do children's voices. And then when they leave, they were actually mad at her. They're like, "Where did you pull that out of?" What? And then of course they get the script, and she's the lead. She got like all the jobs, and it turned out she became the foremost voiceover artist in Toronto, and then in New York, and then in L.A.
Well, I sense that from reading your book that you have your mother's bravery and instincts.
Yeah, and practicality. It's sometimes you get in a situation. It's like, well, how do I get out of this fix? And then I have my father's demented survival instincts of do whatever you have to do to survive.
Let's just do it.
Right.
Just do it.
It's the just do it. It's, he said, when you had malnutrition and had rickets and were starving in the orphanage, you didn't like ponder things too long. You just did it.
You just did it. He was a life coach way ahead of its time.
Right. A really warped life. Well, like that TV show now, what is it? Can you say that word now? The one with William Shatner? They have to bleep it out on the show. It's S, et cetera, my dad says.
Shit?
Yeah, there's that show, Shit My Dad Says. It was a TV series called Shit My Dad Says.
Bitch, too, because...
Oh, awesome. Because on some shows they can say bitch, they can't say shit, you know.
Well, you know, I was going to put up one of your... I found it there. Oh, I did have it. Okay, it did come up. Okay. I downloaded a little bit of your show, too.
Oh, God.
Hey, do you mind if we play a little bit?
Sure, sure.
Okay. I might cut it off at one point because I want to talk to you more.
Okay,
but
good.
Let's just play Allison's Confessions of a Prairie Bitch. This is from her one-person show. That's just the applause. Oh, yeah.
All right. Tonight we're going to answer some questions. Starting with the most pressing question, why am I such a bitch? You want to know why I'm a bitch? I'll tell you why I'm a bitch. Do you have any idea the shit I have had to put up with? Do you know what it means to be Nellie Olson? It means that somebody, somewhere, at least once a day, has called me a bitch to my face every day since I was 11 years old. But my favorite question has to be the one that is asked by a certain kind of fan. See, there are people who watch Little House on the Prairie for what are essentially all the wrong reasons. These are people who don't do well in this time period. I don't want to live in any time period where I can't get a Botox injection and a green apple martini. See, the problem is I've never slept with anyone famous. I have this whole list of famous people I refuse to sleep with. It's weird, no, the only time I have sex with anyone from TV is if I masturbate. I've never had sex with anybody famous. And I only get hit on by horrible celebrities. It's only awful, be like Hervé Dillichet. True. Well, Grizzly Adams. Yeah, Dan Haggerty. I got cornered by Dan Haggerty, Grizzly Adams, by the punch bowl at Brenda Vaccaro's Christmas party.
Okay. I want to talk to you more. That was hilarious. Allison? Are you there? Whoops, where'd you go? Allison? I'm clicking on you. Let's see. Allison, are you there?
I am.
Oh, I'm sorry. I lost you for a minute. I was like looking at...
I was gone. I wasn't there. I didn't...
Yeah, I know, but I was... I don't know if you heard me laughing. I don't know if you have the radio show on. I was laughing.
Awesome.
I'll play it again at the end. I stopped at Grizzly Adams. But that was so funny. It's a very good. Now, you have I can't even tell the audience how much you're doing. It's just so much. But in conjunction with the book, you have a play.
I do. Well, I have a one-woman show. I had been doing stand-up, regular stand-up, for years and years since I was a teenager. And then around 2002, I started doing a real one-woman show, Confessions of a Prairie Bitch, where I started telling some of these insane stories from my life and being hit on by Dan Haggerty and Hervé Villachez. I started putting the real stories in, and it became a whole one-woman show. I have a question and answer segment. We do a whole thing with video clips and photos to go with the stories. It's all like audience interactive multimedia. Very modern. And so it's a whole, like, hour and a half one-woman show, and I did three shows in New York and two in San Francisco, and I'm heading to Las Vegas this afternoon. I got three shows in Vegas, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then next week in Vegas. Then I'm in P-Town. I'm everywhere.
Oh, you'll have Boston. To let me know when you're in, when are you in P-Town?
I am in P-Town. As I turn around, look at the giant, you have those white boards. It looks like a military invasion here in this room. P-Town, I am in this last week of August, the 25th. I'm the 25th, 26th, 27th, 28th, and 29th at
Vixen. I'm writing this down to email out to my friends, okay?
It's all over Facebook, as we say, yes.
Last week of. That's so interesting. And also, so that's funny. So now you've turned your years on a Little House on the Prairie. Oh, by the way, I forgot. I wanted to dedicate this show to my sister Alice, because my sister was her husband was in the military, and as they traveled the world, I said, "Well, gee, what do you guys do in all these different foreign countries?" She says, "Well, we cuddle up and watch Little House on the Prairie and cry
because it's on." In
everywhere. Yes.
Iraq, Iran, yeah. Israel, Argentina. I'm getting mail from Argentina and Poland now. They're the two new ones.
And I said, but isn't it in a different language? They go, yeah, we know, but we still know when to cry.
Exactly. And apparently they all do, too. That's the thing. It's popular in 140 freaking countries.
It's amazing how that has caught on, and when it started, no one thought it would.
Oh, my God, no. No one thought the show would run a year. I mean, NBC, they fought Michael Landon every step of the way. They went, you're crazy. You're crazy. You can't make Little House in the Prairie. No one will watch that.
Now, can you tell me this? Because I know you wrote the book as an adult, so it's from an adult perspective.
Yes.
What do you remember as a child in that situation? What stood out the most in your mind? As a child performer.
I tried to capture what it was like to be a teenager who really just wanted to stay in bed, have to get up and go to work at 4 a.m, and it was hot and it was uncomfortable and it was a very intense experience. I mean, I became really good friends with Melissa Gilbert, and it was a really fun show to do. But it was just this sort of grueling schedule and insanely hot and very hard work, and that's just, it's a lot for an adult to be on a series. But absolutely, to be a kid, to be a teenager, and trying to go to school at the same time, trying to go through puberty while going to work.
In front of everybody, yes.
Yeah, in front of everybody, in front of the world. And that's the thing, because the environment on a set is so just claustrophobic. Everyone feels completely free to comment on your development at any time.
Yeah, when you're a child, that's the interesting thing. When you're even a young woman, it's a different time now. Even now when I see people doing it, I'm like, what do you do? Just say. Is that appropriate?
Cringe, right?
Yeah. Oh, wait, you have a caller. Hold on. Let me see. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. This is Trip Wetzel calling. How are you?
Hi, Trip Wetzel.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Do you have a question for Allison?
Yes, I do. Well, I grew up, I'm a child of the 70s and grew up watching the show. And I was wondering, what was your most memorable moment on the show, or most memorable person you worked with on the show?
Oh, well, my most memorable people, that I'm still in touch with. I mean, Melissa Gilbert and I became best friends. We're still friends. She hurt her back during a musical and is laid up, and I'm sending her presents and going to go over there when I get back from Vegas. And my most memorable episode is the one where she pushes me down the hill in the wheelchair. Where do you get a job where you're called upon to sit in an 1800s wheelchair and go crashing down a hill into a pond? I mean, this is not something that comes up normally.
Well, that's very funny. And what was your inspiration for her? I mean,
I had a lot of that. I mean, I talk about that in the book. I mean, there were definitely several girls at school who were very bullying to me, and it was like, revenge. But I also talk about in the book that I was abused as a kid, and I was the subject of, bully fodder. I was the one that all the bullies picked on. So I was more the shy kid who got beat up all the time. So I'd experience really more this kind of treatment rather than being the Nelly. So I knew what it looked like. I knew what that kind of just awful, evil, psychopathic, inflicting misery person was like. And here I got to play her. And I got to vent all of my anger and my teenage angst and everything else I was going through on camera. So it was a very, psychologically purging experience.
Well, thank you very much. I look forward to reading the book.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Trip Wetzel.
Sure.
Awesome.
Trip Wetzel, fellow Fryer. It was interesting, too. Yes, you did have, a dark childhood on top of everything else. That part I got to and I was like, ah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like, oh, my gosh.
I didn't hold anything back. I can honestly say to you, anybody,
No, you didn't.
Reading my book and go, boy, she didn't leave anything out.
No, and I think it's going to be a very helpful book to a lot of people. And from this crisis, again, you seem to turn salt into sugar. You have now a project that you're working on. Would you like to tell us?
Right. I'm so pleased. So I get typecast as a bitch and people throw things at me, so I make a one-woman show out of it. And then I get abused as a child, and so now I'm on the board of directors and the national spokesperson for a group called National Association to Protect Children, or protect.org. And we're on the web and Facebook and Twitter and everything, protect.org. And it's fantastic because what they're doing is changing laws. We've changed laws in like 7 states, and we also have people working now in Washington, D.C. to get more funding for law enforcement, because what happens is politicians will all say, oh, I love children, I love the family. But when push comes to shove, when there's a law that will actually protect children from predators, from child molesters, from sexual and physical abuse, it's not a priority. It's just not a priority. They have too many things on their plate. They have lobbyists. Every cause, there is no cause that does not have some lobbyist, some guy in a suit down there in Washington pushing to get his stuff passed. But, you know, little kids, 4-year-old girls who are being sexually abused, they don't vote. They don't make political contributions. They don't hire lobbyists. Somebody has to, you know,
and
balance
the law
that
is
side
just,
of the scale.
I totally agree, and the law is just ridiculous.
It's
that
insane. It's
more of a
like
crime to kill a cow than to molest a child.
Yeah, it's really the penalties. Most people think, well, child molesters go to jail. Not terribly often. And then they get out like 20 minutes later. I mean, you see in the news all these times these people who were out, and you're going, why was this guy out when he killed these girls? He should have been in. It makes no sense. The penalties don't match the crime, and these people, they don't get busted. They had a law in California. They had it in New York. We've gotten it out. We killed it in New York. We killed it in California. It's still in like 30 states where, if you molest a child next door, you could get 20 years. But if it's your own kid, you are eligible for no jail time served, probation, straight probation, not a day in jail, therapy, and in the case of California, they had a thing, and it's still true in other states, deferred entry of judgment. You don't have a record. What? Registered sex offender? Every offense is your first offense. You have no registry, no nothing. You're not a sex offender, no conviction. Pass, go, collect $200, do whatever the hell you want, as long as the victim was a relative.
And they do this over and over again. And it's also so warped in that there was some young man who sent out something on of his girlfriend's. He broke into her email and sent out, I guess, nude pictures or something. And now he's a registered sex offender. Do you know?
Because apparently he didn't have the same lawyer as the guy who raped all 4 of his daughters.
Yeah.
You know, who's not.
Yeah.
Right.
And what
is a registered sex offender? This is where we've taken someone who is so untrustworthy that they would attack a child, and we're asking to trust them to tell us their address.
Yeah.
That's what a registered sex offender. I know you raped and nearly killed a bunch of people, but you won't lie to us about your address, will you? Thanks.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll tell us when you move. You'll call us.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there are situations. They did an experiment in Canada, the good old Mounties, where they actually did an intensive parole thing, where they had the parole officers actually check on people, actually go to their house, find out where they were working, actually watch them. And it worked really well. They were able to catch people doing things before they got a kid into the house and stuff like that. But most of the time, our system is so overburdened, we don't make this stuff a priority. So we're just kind of grasping at straws and chasing this and chasing that. Meanwhile, well, okay, the guy who had the girl living in the yard who he bred two children with, he had been convicted of rape and kidnapping. He had kidnapped a woman, almost held her in a room and raped her, nearly killed her, and he was out. He had gotten caught several times raping and molesting people. He was out. Parole officers, cops were called to his house by the neighbors because they said there's something funny going on. There's like kids in the yard. And he was a, quote, ha-ha, registered sex offender. They never went into his house. They never said, gee, can we look around? It's a child locked up in the shed. Nobody bothered. Nobody checked on this guy. It was insane. And he was allowed to run riot. And this is, you know, that's the problem. We don't follow up on these things.
Well, I love your passion for this. I just want to interject for anyone listening. If you have children and they are in that situation, tell them even by dialing 911, and if the person hangs up, in New York at least, the police still will come.
Good.
Did you know that?
No, that's fabulous.
Because they will come to your house because too many people rip the phone out of the wall when somebody dials 911.
Well, yeah, hi. I mean, if you got burglars in the house going to kill you and you pick up 911,
no, but
I
know at least
phone, right?
In New York they will come to your house because my son, when he was two, was playing with the phone and they showed up. And that's how I found out.
Yay, but there you go. The place
but
is on fire.
But it's good to know. Tell your child,
you know,
no matter what, if you feel threatened, dial 911. Even if you hang up, they should come. Because
that's good to know. And we changed the law that now raping your own kid in New York is now the proper felony. People were being allowed to plead down to incest, an e-felony, and not go to jail. But we don't. That's changed. Now it's a felony.
It's so great what you're doing, Allison. You've just channeled everything. I don't know. At what point did you get your whole self together? Because when people read the book and they realize you were an adult so early, and what point, what was your turning point?
Well,
where all of a sudden everything goes and it clicked? Because I know in the book you talk about you realized later in life, I know you go to therapy and you confront your abuser and such, but what was your turning point when, because you can't, that's a lot to carry around. While working, while being called a bitch all the time.
Right, on top of everything else.
On top of it, you're being called a bitch. What was your turning point, do you think? At what age? Maybe this can help somebody.
There were several. I mean, my Auntie Marianne was a very good influence. She was the one who took me to set all the time, and she was really cool. And she was always, you know, had a very optimistic outlook. And so I always knew there was, like, something better, that, you know, just keep looking. And then, yeah, when I got to be in my 20s, you know, and I did, I went into therapy. And that was kind of the things they talked about, is that the idea is actually is not to try to bury stuff, repress stuff, you know, shove stuff under the rug. And the idea is to actually ultimately to incorporate all parts of yourself into your life, is to not, you know, section everything off. That'll make you nuts. The idea is to take as many things of your life as possible and make them, you know, one seamless whole that you can actually, you know, deal with all of the different parts that are you in your life, and you don't have to pretend stuff didn't happen. And I thought, well, what if you went the rest of, what if you just channeled everything that ever happened to you and turned it into something? And, I mean, when I did the one-woman show, it came out of, I was doing stand-up, but some of my comedian friends said, your show's hilarious, but the stories that you tell in the bar afterwards are twice as funny.
Interesting.
And so I thought, well, that's a good idea. And what I realized, and I'm telling all my actor wannabe writer friends this, all of the stories that you're told, you know, your family or your friends, or, oh, don't tell that, and the publicist, well, you can't tell that story, that's terrible, don't talk about that. That's a story you should probably start with when you're, like, writing your show or your book. And kill the critic in your head. I have friends who are very good writers, but they haven't finished their book and haven't done what they're doing because they're too worried. I said, take the critic in your head, take them out in the yard, shoot them, put a bullet in their head, bury them in a shallow grave. Just do not even go. Get rid of it. Just write what the hell. Look, I said, the editors at the publisher, they're going to edit things. They're going to say, we can't fit this all in. You're going to have editors who are going to say, I don't know if I like this story. You're going to have a legal department at the publisher who's going to tell you if there's something you really can't say.
Take that name out.
right. There's going to be people every step of the way who are going to say, and come down. You don't need to do it yourself. Just,
you know what?
Tell
one of my,
you want to tell and fight about it later.
Allison, I have to tell you, the chat room, I don't know who Autis is, but California could use her in politics.
I know. This is one I get a lot. Could you run? Because, you know. And the only thing is, having spent a lot of time in Sacramento, it's like, oh, God, if I was elected to something, I'd have to spend all day with these people. I don't know. I can only take elected officials in small doses.
But it's great. You've taken this. You've channeled it into a book. You've channeled it into a stage play. You've channeled it into an advocacy. Am I saying it right?
My friend dying of AIDS. When Steve Tracy played Percival died of AIDS, I turned that into an advocacy thing. Wound up working at ADLA.
Yes.
So yeah.
Yes, he played your husband on the TV show.
Right.
And how many years were you on that show again?
Oh my God, seven.
7 years of your life.
Plus one. I went back in the ninth episode for one episode.
Oh yes, that was so. It was so interesting, and I love how you said when they tried to replace you with gave away your wig.
Oh my God! It was like they cloned us.
That was hilarious. But they gave away your wig. You came back, but they gave away your wig.
I know my wig was in someone else's head, so I got the crappy wig. It was awful.
That hurt. That hurt. That hurt. It's enough. You won't give me more money to be on the show, but you gave away my wig.
Right. You wouldn't pay me a weekly. And that was so crazy because then it's like, no, we won't pay you. Okay, leave the show. Could you come back for one episode? Sure. How much? Oh, okay. And then they pay me like a gazillion dollars.
And I'm not
going to
say any dollar figures, but just listeners out there, it wasn't like she was getting rich off of this. It wasn't like you're talking about.
This was one of those syndicated shows.
Yeah, it's not like being on Friends where they're getting a million an episode.
No.
It wasn't a substantial amount of money to ask for if you've been on a show for 7 years.
Oh,
and
God, no.
It was a kind of Disney-esque ploy. I don't know if you know, Disney used to fire the Mouseketeers before their contract was up.
That's clever. Yeah, we always had was a horrible disease every year. It was always right at the end of the season. Remember, we had anthrax, we had typhus, we had various plagues. Right, and so that way, if you ask for too much money, you had a relapse, you died, and you're not there anymore.
I know. It looks like that illness isn't going well for you.
Well, you die in a buggy crash at any moment. they killed people all the time on the show. That was terrible. Is that the money we were getting like after being on the show for several years is what people get their first day of work now. It was $70, but I always say we get residuals, but I say more than Gilligan's Island, less than Friends.
More than Gilligan's
Island. We get
Island.
A check, it's just not very much.
Oh, well, that's sad because Gilligan's Island, they didn't make anything.
They got nothing. See, that's the thing.
They didn't even get residuals.
They get zip because if you did your show before 74, you're essentially screwed. There was a period where you got money for like six shows, like the Waltons. The Waltons got checks for six showings. Then, the in perpetuity clause was literally in 1974.
I hate that word, in perpetuity.
In perpetuity, that's when you got your residuals forever, and that was like late 73, early 74 when we started. So we just made the cut, so we still get checks. I mean,
oh my
gosh, like
you are so darn interesting. I'm being remiss. I want to tell where they can get the book. Where can I get this book?
Everywhere.
See how interesting you are? I can't even.
You can get the book. You can go to Borders. You can go to Barnes & Noble. You can go on Amazon.
And your website.
And my website has a link to the Amazon
which
site.
Which is? Say your website slowly.
Go to my website, which is hgd.com/Allison, because it's the official Allison.
Why is it HD?
Because Howie Green Design, HGD,
okay.
Invented the official Allison Arngrim Confessions of a Prairie Bitch Nellie Olson website.
Okay.
But I'm also on Facebook and Twitter. I'm on everything.
And then they can find information about the book there all as well.
Absolutely. And like I said, you Google it. It's on Amazon. It's at Barnes & Noble.
You Google,
Google
you're like
store.
20 pages of a Google.
I know. Do you know if you Google me, it just goes on for pages, and half of it's in French.
That's funny. Now tell me about performing in France, because that was funny.
God,
you've got like three movies in one book. You know that, don't you?
Right. I know. It's like that's what they said. I handed it in. They went, honey, this is six books. What do we do? So I go to France again in October. I do a show. I do a show in French. Well, it's my show, Confessions.
You speak French?
Confession d'une gaffe de la prairie.
Mon Dieu.
Mon Dieu. Oui, je parle. It's very silly. I do a show in French, and I have help. I mean, there's the French guy comes out, and he talks, and we show clips, and then I come out, and I do a bunch of shtick, and it's very funny, and I talk, and then I speak in French. And we do questions, and we show clips, and it's extremely silly in French. And it's kind of the French version, because it's like they didn't watch Fantasy Island that much, so like I can't do the Hervé Villechaize bit.
Yeah.
So certain TV shows, they don't know that celebrity. No, they don't know that guy either. But then there's celebrities they're like
so you
totally
would just,
obsessed with, so we
yeah,
do those.
So you could describe he was this big or...
Right, we can do stuff. Well, it's like I had a gag where I mentioned Todd Bridges, and you know, they call that the Arnold and Willie show. They know different strokes. They're not as into Todd Bridges. But, like, if you want to talk about child actors where it really went wrong, you mentioned the French singer Jordi.
Oh, really?
He was sort of the French Macaulay Culkin. It went really badly. His father totally ripped him off. The French government had to intercede. There was a big lawsuit. And so, yes, you just bring it. If you're talking about screwed up ex-child stars, you say Jordi, and they all go, ah-ha-ha, yeah, and they know what you're talking about.
And now your show is you're in Vegas. You're all over the United States practically.
I am.
Where
I,
is
I,
your
I
base?
I am all over the United States.
Where's your base?
I live in L.A. I am
in L.A. Because this is an international show, so I have people from everywhere listening. So
great. Because yeah, I will be in France. In fact, let's see. I got to pull up like my French dates here.
Hello. I think she clicked on something. Allison, are you there? Let me see. Allison, you hung up. Okay, let me play a little of Allison Unscripted in case you have some questions. I'll until she gets back on. Don't worry, guest. She's going to come back.
Arngrim, and I was born in New York City. I was born in Queens. I'm a nice girl from Queens. I was born in New York City, but we moved to Hollywood when I was three. I was raised in West Hollywood, or as I like to say, I was raised by so many gay people, I'm only a half-breeder. I grew up in Hollywood. I thought everyone in the world was on television, really, until I was about seven and found out people did anything else with their lives. My whole family were in show business, so the idea that my career, my life would be in entertainment was put out, though, in a very ordinary, matter-of-fact, sort of organic way, like, I hate that word, but this is a very organic process. It was put out in a way that if your family ran
a
shoe
store
and you were helping hammer on heels.
Are you back, Allison?
I'm back. Where'd I go? I was there, and then it went clicky-clicky and went away. I have my French dates. I pulled them up on the screen. I pulled
okay, let me just turn this off. Luckily, I uploaded your unscripted also to fill the space
while
I called you. You have to be quick here.
That was the placeholder until you found me again.
Yes. So when are you in France?
I am in France in October. Vendredi, Friday the 15th of October, I am in, and I don't know how to say this town. It's the lower Bath line. I sort of know where it is. It's kind of getting into that Alsace kind of thing. Goswiller, I don't know how to pronounce this. It's Goxwiller because it's kind of up in the German border area.
Goxwiller.
Goxwiller. It probably is because it's eastern France where everything is very Germanic as well. And
all of Albert Schweitzer there.
The Moselle area, Folking, which is it's Folking, and I'm dying to know how that's pronounced. one of my shows is sold out, actually. October 16th is sold out.
Are you going to be in Canada? I have some Canadian listeners in there.
I don't have any bookings in Canada right now. I should. They love me in Vancouver. But then I'm Vegas this weekend. I'm Vegas next weekend. And then I'm signing at the Borders in Vegas. Then I'm going to be in Georgia, in Atlanta, signing books. And then I go to Ohio. And then I go to P-Town, good old P-Town. And let's see, and then I go to, I'm in P-Town, I have five shows, the 25th, 26th, 27th, 28th, 29th.
Oh, you're going to do well there. I think you're going to have
I'm
sending friends.
I'm in Chicago in September, 9th and 10th of September, I'm in Chicago. And then I'm in Seattle, then I'm in South Dakota, then I'm in France, then I'm in Boston. I have 2 weekends, last 2 weekends of October, Halloween, I'm in Boston.
Oh, that's, you should do very well there. Hey, you know what I realized? The bookstores you can get your book at are Borders.
Yes.
What did you tell
Borders, Barnes & Noble, all of them.
And you can order them online as well.
You can absolutely order them online. I'm in every bookstore. I'm in like Larry Edmonds and Hollywood Boulevard. I am totally
you
everywhere.
Have turned this into such, not only are you acting, doing comedy, writing, you're a marketing maven here.
Right.
I mean, you are marketing, you have such a markability, and I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention your husband.
Oh, yes, exactly. I'm an oldest friend. My husband's name is Bob Schoonover, and he's in a band called Catahoula.
I would have played music if I had known that. Oh.
Right? Oh, yeah. That you can get them on iTunes. And
okay.
On TV,
I would have played it on the show.
Catahoula, kind of like it sounds, Catahoula.
And give him a plug. What's his website?
There is a Catahoula website, but actually iTunes and CD Baby is the best place to find them. Howie Green Design does have a Catahoula page if you do like hgd.com/Catahoula. But I would say go hit up CD Baby and iTunes because there's info about them there and you can download the songs and hear them right away. They're doing their second CD is just about finished. That should be out any second. We'll get that up on the web for you. But the first one is very good and they've played the Whiskey and the Roxy and all the clubs in L.A. And it's kind of, I always said it sounds like if Fleetwood Mac and Heart went to Mardi Gras together. It's very Little Feet, kind of Cajun-flavored, old-fashioned rock and roll.
Oh, yeah, I just emceed the No Folk Festival here.
There you go. You like them.
Yeah, no, it's great. And tell us how you met.
Well, we met actually at AIDS Project Los Angeles, because I said Steve, who played Percival on the show, had gone public with his AIDS diagnosis in the 80s when nobody was doing that.
Nobody did it, yes.
Nobody. And he died in 86, and when he went public, I wound up, you know, I was in this bizarre position. People were like, do you have it? And so I wound up volunteering at AIDS Project Los Angeles and taking hotline training. And that's where I met Bob, who was actually running the Southern California
Wait,
AIDS.
Wait, back up, back up. Allison, with everything you were doing, you went, an actress, a Hollywood actress, you went and volunteered at a hotline?
Yes, I went and took the several weeks training.
Wait, wait.
52 hours of training.
That's me applauding you.
Exam. Yes.
That's
I did, and,
so
and I was one of their better volunteers. I got one of the highest scores on the exam, and I not only answered calls for several years at the Southern California AIDS Hotline, I was on the AIDS Project Los Angeles Speakers Bureau. I volunteered at everything from the food bank to various hospices. I spoke all over the state. And, and I was on what they call the Ambassador Council. And then I also did their fundraiser every year. They had a party at Universal Studios for years. They did a whole thing called Summer Party. And I produced and hosted the comedy stage for the big, like, fundraiser that raised several hundred thousand dollars in a night.
Wow. This is amazing. There's even more to your story than is in your book.
Yeah, I couldn't fit it all in, man. I have highlights.
It's just so amazing. I hope you're going to bring your show to New York.
Okay, I was there. I was at the Laurie Beachman in June. I love that place. The book came out June 15th, and so I did the usual thing. I came in, I was at the Borders Columbus Circle, and I went to the
So this is
show.
A new release. I didn't even realize to mention that.
Hot off press. Ink is barely dry.
And for those of you listening, Laurie Beachman Theater is a famous, famous, famous theater. Did you record this by any chance?
No, I've got a little bit of video. I want to do a little clip thing from it. I know. I got to get more stuff like on the YouTube. It's lovely. I did the cutting room a lot. In fact, the show that I do now was actually premiered in its current form at Club Fez, the infamous Fez that was in the
I performed
the
at Club Fez. I know Club Fez. I
love
performed
Fez.
That, where the train runs under down every
yes,
15
yes,
minutes.
Yes, it's like, oh, my God,
you'll
I'm going
to
die.
You'll be in the middle of your set. You're in the middle
right.
of your set, and you hear, like, rumble, 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 rumble.
I'm from California. I thought I was doomed. I'm in a basement. We're having a quake.
And I'm going, excuse me, I'm just hungry. But, yes, I know Fez very well. We have a question in the chat room. Is your book available for the iPad and Kindle reader?
It is indeed. It is out on Kindle, and I believe it's in multiple formats there on Amazon. I know it's Kindle, and I think it's the iPad and whatnot. But the amazing thing about the Kindle is outselling the hardcover, which they say is the new trend in the modern world here. And it's wild because, as I said, our show took place in the 1870s. It aired in the 1970s, and people are reading about it on Kindle. It's just, like, so bizarre that this would have come to this.
And also in the chat room, they said fantastic guest today. That's your
yes.
You got fantastic
great.
Guests.
Thank you.
And the interesting, I liked one of the things you pointed out. See what I remember? A lot of people think, as an interviewer, do I really read the books? Yes, I do.
Good.
Because what stood out to me is when you started to describe in Little House on the Prairie how they had to wear the button hook shoes and you didn't because you got to wear the Mary Janes.
I got to wear the little Mary Janes. Yeah, yeah.
The difference in that, and your aunt, was it your aunt Marion?
Auntie Marion, yep.
She remembered when she says, oh, yes, the poor people wore those shoes.
it was, like, awful. I mean, that was the thing. It's all these hooks and eyes and button hooks and shoes. She was horrified. She's like, oh, I'll help her get dressed. And when she saw the clothes, she's like, really? You know, I was happy that I'd lived to this century because I didn't want to, like, have to deal with a button hook again in my lifetime. Oh, Christ. She was appalled that I was having to deal with all these clothes. She's like, yeah, I remember when getting dressed was this hard, but that was 7 years ago.
That was 7 years ago. I mean, you were quite mature for your age. I don't know if it's because you had show business parents, so, you know, just putting yourself out there and having confidence was part of it.
Well, I was very shy. I mean, really, I mean, I had to fake it a lot. I mean, I was very shy. I was the girl who got beat up by bullies. I had been abused.
And Allison,
so
I got into stand-up comedy because of that.
Yeah.
We moved around a lot, and I was very tiny, and I was always the little kid, the new kid, with a Spanish parent.
Oh, dear.
And
right.
I was, my mother had an accent, and I was beat up at every school, and I started to learn by third grade if I told a joke, I could stall a beating.
Yes, isn't it amazing how people who are, like, angry, going to beat you, you can make them laugh? It's the strangest thing. I always think, how can you be that easily distracted? Wow. But they will. They'll start laughing and not hit you.
Yes, and that was how I got, when people say, how did you get into stand-up? I said, well, I started telling jokes by third grade because I was tired of being beat up, being the new kid all the time. And it's interesting. Also in the chat room, I am ordering the book on Amazon right now.
I love you.
And here's another one, question for Allison. Did you save anything from the costumes or props when the show ended? If yes, what?
I wish I did. No. Nothing. I wish I did. I wish I did.
You didn't have a friend prop master somewhere who didn't say, hey, I saved this for you?
I almost got the shoes. There were these shoes that Nellie had in the last 2 years that were sort of these pink and beige canvasy. They were beige canvas with pink leather, little high-button shoes, and they were gorgeous, and they were custom-made, and I didn't get them, and the wardrobe woman had them, but then she moved. She had to leave.
Oh,
like moving
ouch.
To Virgin Islands or something crazy, and I didn't get over to her house in time.
And your website, again, I just want to repeat it a couple of times here,
www.hgd.com/Allison.
I got to think of HGD.
Yeah, and like I said, if you Google it, it comes up first. If you go to Facebook, if you go to Twitter, you
heavy
can find
gorgeous
it.
Doll. Okay, I got it.
There you go. Or go to Facebook. I mean, I post on Facebook for.
Oh, you're on Facebook? Oh, you'll have to be my Facebook friend now too.
Oh, I'm like I'm adding stuff to Facebook and Twitter from my droid. I'm like so modern.
Oh, she heard that Friends and Seinfeld cast all took or were given special mementos from their shows.
Yeah, well, yeah, they all got paid more too, didn't they?
Yes, they did, Alice.
They're also all rich.
HGD. I got it. Yeah. Heavy, gorgeous doll.
Okay.
I have a vision of a heavy, gorgeous doll with blonde ringlets, and that's how I remember it, that it's a heavy, gorgeous doll. And now you're doing – are you still doing stand-up, by the way?
I am. Well, it's the one-woman show. I'm going to Vegas this afternoon. That's what I said.
Oh, that's great. Yes, no, and your stand-up is your one-person show
as
well?
It is, yes. The stand-up comedy evolved
great.
Into a one-woman show. Yes, it's a one-woman show. It's more like a theatrical piece, but it's really, really funny, and it has photos and videos.
The chat room had a great idea on how to remember it. Have a good day.
Haveagoodday.com/Allison. And, yeah, and there's an Arngrim.com that will direct you to things. If you go to Arngrim.com, you can find where to, like, buy T-shirts.
Now,
and
I want to say something because we have a mutual friend, and I am surprised he is not calling in. I'm going to bust his chops. Jim Dykes does tours.
Jimmy!
Rich and Famous, one of my favorite people. I've had him on the show. He does.
Jimmy, thanks. Go look in the acknowledgments in the back of the book. Jimmy is in the book.
Yes, he told me.
Oh, I'm sure he's telling everyone. I want pages on. Jimmy is in the book because I stay at his place all the time in New York.
He is the sweetheart, and he does tours of the rich and famous people.
Rich and famous tours. Jimmy
they
Dykes
might even
does,
point out Allison's house.
Best plug I can give you. Yeah, Jimmy Dykes does the best tour in New York. There, you just got to plug Jimmy. You happy? But he does. He does these great. He's one of those people. He is like an incurable tour guide. It's you're going to the store with him, and as you're walking through New York, he goes, you know, this building on your left, it was actually built in 1812.
And he's gorgeous on top of it.
He is adorable. You know, it's all like
oh, you two must make quite the couple walking down the street.
Oh, I know. People think we're married. We're just like the cute, blonde, blue-eyed people.
Yes, very, very attractive. And it's just I'm going to bust his chops about that. You know, Jimmy, where are you? But
wait, I can't believe Jimmy isn't jumping in on this call. It's a start, but he does. He's a fabulous tour guide, and I stay at his house. And I was actually like at his house the day I made the deal with HarperCollins. It was hysterical. I met a literary agent in New York, and I was staying at Jimmy's and going to meetings with publishers.
Oh, he has been talking about you for years. He goes, you've got to meet her. She's so fantastic. But it's so great. I'm just so impressed what you're doing. And let's give the website of your advocacy.
Protect.org. That's an easy one.
Protect.org.
Yes, go there, and you can read all sorts of interesting things we're up to.
Do you have any plans for a film?
I don't know. I've already talked to people who want to make a movie out of the book. I mean, people have already called. It's like that nuts. I don't know, I suppose. And as far as making movies, I did make The Yuletide Gay last year, and they're making a sequel, so I guess I'm in that.
The Yuletide Gay?
Make The Yuletide Gay. Oh, it's hysterical. It's a gay Christmas comedy. I'm the ex-girlfriend's mom, the annoying next-door bossy neighbor. It's kind of Mrs. Olsen goes, you know, modern.
Uh-huh. Way.
And it's very funny, and I wear a lot of leopard print and say, yoo-hoo, and things like that. Hilarious. Oh, my God, yes, it's Netflix. You can get it on Netflix.
Netflix.
It's on DVD.
Make The Yuletide Gay.
Make The Yuletide. Yuletide Gay.
Yuletide Gay.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And it's really cute. It's just this guy who goes home from college for Christmas, but he hasn't told his parents he's gay, and the boyfriend shows up. Chaos ensues. and it's just really silly. It's like how far will he go to try to pretend he isn't gay to his parents, who are this wonderfully dotty couple who are like, she's from Minnesota and he's from Wisconsin. They're like, oh yeah, your apple skeebler's getting cold, and they're just completely out to lunch, and he's like trying to conceal the fact he's gay from them, and the boyfriend's like, you got to be kidding me. They don't notice. And it's like, how far will this go? Will they figure it out? And it just gets sillier and sillier. And it's a heartwarming family Christmas comedy. And he's gay. And I'm the crazy next-door neighbor. And my daughter in the movie used to date him. And I still can't figure out why he didn't marry her. And, yeah, it's pretty silly.
Allison, let me ask you something, because I'm getting – you're so succinct. You're so well-spoken. You're so vivacious.
Thank you.
Why don't you have your own TV show?
That would be good. I could do that.
I can't think of a better host than someone like you.
Yeah, but we wouldn't need any guests. I could just do all the talking.
The Allison Show.
That's my friend Howie says.
It's my world, and you're just living in it. That's it.
Right. That's Howie Green, who did my website, said, I want to have the Allison Show, but no guests. That would just mess things up. Just her for the hour.
That's a very funny premise for a sitcom, by the way. She has no guest. It's just her show.
I just sit there and talk for an hour.
It's almost like Wendy O. Williams, where, you know, it's like, is she ever going to let anybody on?
Oh, I'm dying. I want to get on her show. I think I'm going to. I think I'm going to try, because I'm going to be in town. You know, I said October. I'm coming into Boston and the area. So I totally want to do Wendy's show. She's a star.
Oh, you send her the book with a little note.
Right?
I mean, who doesn't? You'd be a great guest. How tall are you?
How tall am I? Oh, I'm barely 5'4".
Are you kidding?
Four heels. I'm little.
Really? Oh, my gosh.
5'3" and 7/8" with the high heels.
In all your videos, I assumed you were very, very tall.
Isn't that great? So, I'm a big girl, yes. No, I'm little.
Yes, and let's go back to Confessions of a Prairie Bitch and say the rest of the title.
Confessions of a Prairie Bitch, How I Survived Nellie Olson and Learned to Love Being Hated.
Now, have you recorded this book? I mean,
no, not yet, but I presume, yes, there is a whole thing. They eventually do the audio book, and yes. I'll record that when I do.
The audio.
My memory. I won't have to read it. I'll just go, well, in the first chapter I said.
I want to ask you. You know that you know the Upright Citizens Brigade.
Yes.
Heard of. Yes. Okay. Now you've heard they're reading autobiographies.
No, I have. No, I didn't know that.
Did you know that they're? I don't know if you know about this. They're doing actual shows with this. You have to Google this.
Oh my God! Oh my God! It'd be hysterical.
They have celebrity comedians from Saturday Night Live and all. I'm trying to think of remember all the comedians and actors reading the book. So it might be a man reading from your book, might be a woman reading from your book. I just thought I'd bring this to your attention.
This could be very funny.
So someone reading for a celebrity reading from your book, but it's a new thing. So they'll pick three celebrities like Elizabeth Taylor, and they'll read their biographies.
Well, some of those biographies are also it's slightly hilarious because they're like so ghostwritten. They're so overwritten by a committee. And the you know there was it someone said to me, honey, half the celebrities don't read their own autobiographies, let alone write them. So
well, that's
some
what's
of them
interesting.
Are like
let me ask you this: I do have a question here, a valid question. You wrote this.
Yes.
You spent most of your life on the set because I'm doing the math. From 7, you would have been 18 or 19 when you finished?
Yes, yes.
How did you learn to write so well?
I did. I thank my sixth grade teacher in the back of the book for making sure that we could, like, read and write correctly. And then I was always writing. I mean, I would write stuff with the stand-up. I started writing, actually getting articles published in the 80s. I was writing stuff about AIDS. I had an article in Designers West talking about why I volunteered at AIDS Project Los Angeles. I had an article run in Frontiers Magazine talking about some friends who died of AIDS. And so I'd written things like that, and even then people said, you know, this is good. I mean, you can write. You can get your point across. It's like, oh, good to know. So I was writing things for that, and I was having to write things. Well, okay, I got as far as explaining to you what I did for APLA with the fundraisers and the hotline. Then there was also another AIDS organization called Tuesday's Child where we help families with children with AIDS, and I worked there for like 4 years. I was like program manager. And
that's not to be confused with Tuesday's Child, which are children of surviving 9/11 who lost their parents in 9/11.
Ah, which is a very good name. Because yeah, Tuesday's Child is now defunct, and it was L.A. only, but it was families with children with HIV.
Now it's for children.
Because that was a Tuesday.
Yes,
right.
And
right.
I performed for these kids recently.
Oh, awesome, awesome. That's
so,
really good.
That's
a good
one. But
I'm glad that the name lives on in something good like
Allison, awesome. You there?
Somebody's
okay.
afraid to call in.
No,
we'll call
it's
later.
Just amazing. I mean, we're running out of not too much time. We have a few minutes left. Just want to say HGD. Go fill in the rest. Get your book.
HGD.com/Allison. But go to Facebook. Go to Facebook.
Everybody join her Facebook so you can find out where she's performing next and go see her show. Yeah, I can't wait for you to come to New York. I think the book is so well written.
Thank you.
It's so. I gave you, I believe, a nice little blurb if you check out Amazon. I give you a little review
thank
there.
Thank you.
And it's so entertaining, but it's more than just another Hollywood book. It's more. This book is for everybody, men, women. It's for everybody.
How many celebrity bios have an appendix where they list all of the websites and phone numbers of every social issue raised in the book?
It's amazing what you're doing.
You can go to Protect. You can read about. You can go to the National AIDS Hotline. I have all this stuff in the back of the book.
The thing about your book is you can take almost any section of it and quarter it, and it's a movie. it reads like a movie.
Cool.
That you can't even. And I think that's what's amazing about the way you've written it. Is this your first book?
Yes, it is.
Wow!
I
look at
you.
Inventing yourself in your third or fourth decade.
Yourself. Well, that's the thing. But when you're a child actor, it's weird because you're like over the hill at 19 and you're having a midlife crisis at 25. But the good news is you can be in your fifth career in your 40s.
It's the Stephen Sondheim song, "And I'm Still Here."
Yeah, I'm very still here.
That you've done all of this and that you continue to do this, but you don't just – it's not that you've written a book or that you're just doing a one-person show while promoting a book. It's that you're giving back, and that's something you don't hear about a lot. You don't hear about people who give back, but you've been giving back before it was in to give back.
Well, exactly. In fact,
were getting press for giving back.
Okay, well, the article that I wrote that ran in Designers West was actually called Off the Celebrity Bandwagon, explaining that there were people who really did things to help people with HIV who were not doing it just because they were famous and to get press, who were actually doing it to help their sick friends.
And you've pulled yourself through so many things where I think this is a book of hope, that not just a book of entertainment. It's very entertaining to read, but it's a book of hope and that you're not alone. You can pull yourself out. There is help out there.
Yes. I always tell people, just keep looking. It's like I mentioned this in the book. You know, they talk about depression is anger turned inward and learned helplessness. If you are convinced that you're helplessness, there's no way out. There's nowhere to go. You're going to go nuts. You're going to hurt yourself. You have to, no matter how bad it is, that you are not helpless. There is some kind of help somewhere. It may be you who helps yourself. You may find someone who helps you. It may not be where you think it is. Maybe it'll be the therapist. Maybe it won't be that therapist. Maybe it'll be something else. But there's something better out there, whatever is going on in your life.
And you have listed all these things in your book, too, for the self-help,
yes.
For to get help, to do
absolutely.
This.
Absolutely.
I just want to highly recommend this book. I give it a good review. People, get out there. Get your Confessions of a Prairie Bitch, Allison Arngrim.
Awesome.
I just want to break into a Scandinavian Allison Arngrim.
My father's full name was Torhild Marvin Arngrimsson.
Yes, and you don't even know because that was the name from the second thing.
Right, yes, that is the adopted name.
But you've been an absolutely wonderful guest. I hope that people – oh, I like that you got Bruce Valanche to give you a review.
Right, do you love that? I got Bruce Valanche and Margaret Cho.
Oh, you've got Margaret Cho, Carol Channing, Phyllis Diller, one of my favorites.
Who has a blurb on the back of the book from Phyllis Diller and Carol Channing, I ask you. And nobody has, like, Margaret Cho, Bruce Valanche, and then Melissa Gilbert. Nobody has blurbs from this selection.
They do not, and we want to say in our last minute, we're sending out a virtual hug to Melissa Gilbert to feel better with her back.
Don't hug her too hard, her back still hurts.
Her back still hurts, but she'll be up on her feet, and whatever show she's doing, everyone go see that and be supportive.
Okay. Awesome.
But 90 seconds. Okay, Allison Arngrim, Confessions of a Prairie Bitch, How I Survived Nellie Olson and Learned to Love Being Hated. I could go on for hours with you. You're such a fantastic guest.
Thank you. Good
luck in Las Vegas. Break a leg, and thank you for being on the show,
thank
everyone.
You.
Any last thing? You have 10 seconds or 15.
Protect.org.
Protect.org. Let's go to it. Buy the book. Thank you, Allison.
Okay.
Loved having you. Look, let me know when you're coming to New York. We'll go to the Friars Club for drinks, okay?
Awesome. Okay.
All right, Allison. Thank you.
All right.
Bye. Thank you. That was Allison. Just fantastic guest. I can't even I can't even begin to say this has just been so fantastic having her on the show. So get that book, everybody. Get that book. And thank you very much. As the seconds peter off, I was just looking. Oh, here's a good song. We'll just go out on this. You can't judge a book by its cover. Here we go. Too long a startup time. Sorry, everyone. Thank you for being on Comedy Concepts today. And everyone, have a good day. Go get this book, Confessions of a Prairie Bitch. You're going to love it. Give it to someone you love because you care. Thank you very much. Thank you.